I'll put it up against anyone.
Labor and Commerce will now come to orders 3:20 on March 25th. Members present are Representative Chenault, Representative Reinbold, Representative Josephson, Representative Millette, myself, Chair Olson. We do have a quorum to conduct business, and I believe we'll have at least two more people in. Please turn off your cell phones. We have two bills on the calendar today. I hope we get through both of them. Both of them are relatively simple. First up is House Bill 168, Travel Insurance. And presenting that is Anna Latham from my office.
Is this your bill, Mr. Chairman?
Oh, yes. Must be my bill, too.
This should go fast.
Hearing no opposition, we will. Welcome back, Ms. Latham.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Anna Latham, staff to Representative Olson. Before you today is House Bill 168, an act amending the definition of travel insurance for the purpose of describing a person eligible for a travel insurance limited producer license and authorizing a person selling travel services to transact the business of travel insurance on behalf of and under the direction of a person licensed as a travel insurance limited producer. HB 168 is based on in-coil model legislation, and that's the National Council of Insurance Legislators. This is currently being implemented across the U.S. with the goal of improving consumer protection and creating consistency in travel insurance sales. Briefly, I'll go over the sectional. So in Section 1, travel insurance is redefined. It means insurance coverage for personal risks connected to travel, including trip interruption or cancellation, lost baggage or personal effects, damage to accommodations or rental vehicles, or sickness, accident, disability, or death occurring during travel. It doesn't include comprehensive medical insurance that provides coverage for trips lasting 6 months or longer. And this is an attempt by INCOIL to standardize the definition of travel insurance in all 50 states. Alaska's version has only been slightly modified, but some states still had travel by steamship and paddle boat and outdated modes of transportation. So that's just an attempt to standardize the definition. And in Section 2, it adds a new section defining travel insurance and who may transact travel insurance. It allows a person that transacts travel services the ability to sell those products under the direction of a person holding a travel insurance limited producer license. It requires the Travel Insurance Limited Lines producer to maintain a register of all persons selling insurance on their behalf and to provide a training program. It limits the information that a person transacting travel insurance may provide and may not provide to a customer. It also makes a Travel Insurance Limited producer liable for the acts of a person selling travel insurance on their behalf. So INCOIL came up with this model because right now there are 41 different qualifications for travel agents to become licensed to sell insurance across the U.S. Many states don't accept any or the same electronic applications, and as a result, it commonly takes about 6 months to become licensed in an industry that usually suffers pretty high turnover. And furthermore, travel agents really aren't in the insurance business. Insurance sales account for only about 2% of their overall revenue. So that's a small portion to go through the hassle of becoming licensed in all the states. And the travel industry has changed significantly over the past 20 years. The model's shifted away from brick and mortar or Main Street travel agents and that cater to clients within their states. It's now common for travel agents to sell a majority of their products either via the internet or across state lines to clients in different states. So the industry has changed. And this INCOIL model establishes a licensing framework that reflects the unique distribution of the system of travel insurance in the industry and places the regulatory burden not on the retail travel agent, but on the insurer who develops and distributes the product. This improves consumer protection by requiring clearer accountability and notice to the consumer and regulator with respect to who's responsible for the sale. And this model clearly distinguishes licensable and non-licensable activities for limited lines products, such as travel insurance, and promotes uniformity to help states more effectively govern these products. And so far, a version of this has been enacted in 8 states. It's awaiting the governor's signature in 2 other states, and there's legislation pending in 16 states, including Alaska. So INCOIL is really pushing for this legislation to go through. And it's deregulatory in nature and brings Alaska in line with the national model. So that concludes my testimony for HB 168. And as you're aware, there is a CS in front of you. It's version O.
At this point in time, I'd like to acknowledge we've been joined by Representative Sadler. And I think the one comment I would make would be this would be similar to what happens with car rental agencies when you walk up to the counter and the person at the counter offers you a limited insurance product with the license being held elsewhere. Mm-hmm. But we do, when we get down to it, we do have John Fielding from the U.S. Travel Association online, and we are going to start working our way through the bill. I would like to entertain a motion to adopt the CS as the working document.
Mr. Chair, I move Committee Substitute House Bill 168, version O, as the working document.
And I'll object for purposes of, because I can.
You're an objectionable kind of guy?
Yeah, I've been objectable today, and a day older. And Anna will explain the changes in the CS.
Sure. So, changes from version C to version O. All of these changes were just for clarity and organization. There's not any substantive changes. First one is on line 4. I'm sorry, page 4, line 26. And it changes from, subsection 1, maintain in a format prescribed by the director or register. That's just reorganized, and then everything in that register was included in bullet points A, B, and C in that section. So page 4 is line 26 through 28. And that was just for clarity. And then the other change that I had was page 5, line 7. In version C, an employee of was there. That has been deleted, and it just is, requires a person transacting travel insurance to complete a training program. So those were the two changes, and they were just for organization and clarity of the bill, nothing substantive.
Any questions? And we've been joined by Representative Bob Herring as well. We do have a full committee, or almost. Any questions for Anna on the CS? Now with that, I'll I no longer object to adopting the CS. Any questions from the committee on the bill before we go out to public testimony?
Yes, just one, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Josephson.
Is this going to create any difficulty with someone who feels they need some sort of recourse, they're not getting the benefit of the travel insurance? I assume they'd still go to the original broker. They wouldn't go to his or her sort of deputized person.
Anna?
Sure, there is a lot of consumer protection in the bill that they would direct any complaints or comments they have to the producer. Mm-hmm. And I've asked the department and the director of division, the Division of Insurance, and about complaints they have had. Just with the limited lines producers that they have now. I think there's 259 resident and non-resident limited lines producers registered in the state of Alaska now, and they have very few complaints as it is. But if so, those complaints would be addressed to the producer.
Yeah, who is liable. We have Director Kolb in the room as well for questions. So. Any further questions for Anna? Any questions for Commissioner Kolb? Director Kolb. Give you a promotion, too. seeing none, we will go on to public testimony. Is there anybody in the room that would care to testify on this bill? Seeing none, I know that we have one gentleman online. John Fielding, are you with us? John, are you with us?
Apologies. This is John Fielding, yes.
Please state your name and affiliation for the record, and do you have a statement or are you just here for questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is John Fielding. I'm with Steptoe & Johnson in Washington, D.C., and I represent the U.S. Travel Insurance Association. I'm happy to make a short statement and answer any questions if that is appropriate.
Certainly.
Thank you, first of all, for letting me talk to you folks by telephone. This is very helpful. I would like, on behalf of the USTAA, to urge adoption of HB 168. We believe, the U.S. Travel Insurance Association believes, that this is a good piece of legislation, good for consumers, good for regulators, as well as the industry players who are required to comply with these requirements. We think it's good for consumers because it provides training to the retail travel agents who offer and disseminate the product. It also requires disclosures to consumers that aren't required now in terms of what the product is and also what the retail travel agents are permitted and not permitted to do. We think it's good for the regulators because it provides a streamlined, simplified way to get the regulators the information they need in order to, in case anything does go wrong, and we hope it doesn't, but in case anything does, in order to get to the licensed producer and the entity that is responsible. And we also believe it's good for the industry players like the USTIA members who are required to comply because, as Ms. Latham said, it's a very difficult process right now for retail travel agents to comply across the country with these obligations. The industry has changed a lot. There are folks who are must be licensed across the country, and we're talking about travel agents and not insurance agents who don't think insurance all the time. And so we really believe that the legislation is good because it puts the onus on the actual insurance players, the insurers, the intermediaries, the TPAs, and so forth, who actually are the insurance players in this sort of program. They're required to comply. They're required to make sure that everyone in the system is in compliance and get the information as appropriate to the insurance department. So thank you for your time, and we again urge you to support the House Bill 168. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Fielding. Any questions for Mr. Fielding? Thanks again, John. Is there anybody else online to testify? Is there anybody else in the room who's changed their mind? Seeing none, with that, we will close out public testimony and bring it back to the committee for discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to support this bill. I guess it brings back one memory I had practicing law as a younger man. I think it's a good bill. People need to be careful about the language of their policies, and that includes me. I helped represent a four deceased Germans who died just west of Whitehorse, and the dispute was, did their policy issued out of Europe, did it cover sort of what they call a frolic and detour, where they began in Alaska and were going to return to Alaska but were driving through the Yukon? And it was a vicious dispute about jurisdiction and whether it should be filed in Canada or Alaska. I think it's the insurance industry is great, but they have their motivation, and we just have to be aware of that. That's all. Related to that is the whole issue, and I don't think this bill is designed to touch on this one way or the other, but when the producer is using brokers, you know, I just would be watchful of customers who hear reports that, well, geez, I don't really do business in Alaska, and you'd have to talk to my producer and that kind of thing. So I sound skeptical. I'm going to support this. I just think it brings back other things I've experienced in my life and that raise some concerns. So.
And again, I've been involved with this bill on the other side too, on the NCOIL side, and I think the intent is standardization and to level the playing field and to get rid of the necessary hurdles in the transaction. And my gut feeling is it'll work out pretty good. Again, I'm prejudiced, so I wanted to declare conflict on that, but I'll still vote. Any further comments? Entertain a motion.
I move Committee Substitute House Bill 168, Version O, from committee with individual recommendation and attached fiscal note.
Seeing no opposition, the bill moves out of committee, and we will take a brief at ease.
No, I just ordered my business.
Oh, you better.
Can I have
that?
Oh, yeah.
We're back on the record. The next item on the calendar, and hopefully the last, is House Bill 102. It's a continuation from bill that we heard on the 25th of February and then again last week. During those hearings, we made a presentation of the bill. We adopted the CS version U as the working document and completed public testimony. Today, it is my intent to address the amendments in the members' packets and move the bill as the committee wishes. For a brief recap of the bill, we have Ernest Prax, who walk us through the new version, which I think we're all familiar with. And judging by all the people in the room, I think everybody in the room probably is, too. Welcome back, Ernest.
Thank you. For the record, Ernest Prax, after Representative Keller. Just a quick recap of the changes that were made to the U version. There was the first change corrected a drafting error, and that was in version A. And that, again, is on page 3, line 3. And then the second change was we deleted out section 38 of the A version. There was some question as to whether that was needed, so we just deleted it out. And that is the only changes that were made between the A and U version.
Any questions for us? Representative Sadler.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I'm a big confused. I want to make sure this. So we're on work draft version uniform. Is that our working document?
Yeah.
Okay. And you were speaking to the changes that result in the CS, not the amendments.
Yeah, we've got
good
amendments.
Okay. Thank you. I'm sorry. So, yep,
shortly. Representative Chenault.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have my other version before me, but could you tell me what Section 38 dealt with?
We've got one coming for you.
Go ahead, Mr. Chairman. I just was curious.
Yeah. Took out a few words.
I suspected that when you take the section out.
The effective date, and I can't remember what the other one was, but no.
Pretty sure it's her birthday boy.
Embrace
that. She's good, she didn't hear it.
Thanks again, Ernest. With that, we have version U before us as the working document. Amendment U1 will not be offered. That was the former conceptual amendment number one. Can I have a motion to adopt the new number one, which is U number three?
I move Amendment Number 1, U3, to House Bill 102.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. And Director Brett Kolb will join us at the table. And welcome back.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Brett Kolb, Director of Division of Insurance. All right, the amendment U3 that's offered was to ensure, it was to delete the or for a group or other type of policy that insures the life of one or more individuals, which we felt was broad and ties it to trusts. So it's life insurance policies issued or delivered for a trust governed under the laws of this state. So it was, the intent, as I understand it, of House Bill 102 was to address trusts, and the way it was originally drafted, it broadened out the premium tax handling for every type of insurance as opposed to just related to trusts. And this inserted language that's listed on Amendment U3, starting in lines 8 through 10, defines it to ensure that it's a life insurance policy that's delivered for a trust that gets this favorable treatment, which is 2.7% premium tax for the first 100,000 in premium, and then 0.1% for the premium above the first 100,000.
Representative Josephson.
Thank you. To the commissioner, what if this bill passes, where do we stand vis-a-vis the other states on the rate charged over 100,000? Would we be just the most generous?
No, there are other states that I believe it's South Dakota that offers a 0.8 on the first 100,000. I'm not exactly sure what their rate is on the first 100,000, but I know on the second 100, everything above the first 100 is at a 0.8 of 1% as opposed to 1/10, 0.08 of 1% as opposed to a 10th.
Follow-up? Yeah, and if you'll help remind me, does the insured person or trust have to have some connection other than just owning an account in Alaska? Does there have to be a property interest or an individual or some other kind of nexus?
Representative Josephson, through the chair. There you're getting into trust, the trust law and how the trust law works, which is not part of the insurance portion of it.
Okay.
So, unfortunately, I don't have that answer for you.
Okay. My only other question, I know we're looking at U.3, but Mr. Chairman, the U2, not the band, but the...
Yeah.
could be the band. This sunset amendment, this is not being offered anymore?
No, it is.
It is, okay.
Yeah, that'll be the new number two.
Okay. I don't have any other question.
With that, is there any further discussion on the amendment? With that, I'll remove my objection. Amendment number three is now adopted. And can I have a motion to adopt amendment number two, which is U2?
I move amendment to U2 to House Bill 102.
And I'll object for purposes of discussion. Brett, you want to walk us through this one?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Do you need for the record again?
For the record, yeah.
For the record. Okay. For the record, I'm Brett Gold, with the Director of the Division of Insurance. U2 amendment provides a sunsetting provision, and what this is intended to do is, after 5 years, it removes what is being done right now and takes it back to exactly how things are being handled today. So it removes this favorable trust treatment just to ensure that things are working the way that we want them. So it creates a sunset provision after 5 years.
And the intent on that would be, at this point in time, it does not appear that we are missing a lot of premium off it. We're being competitive on a few number of policies, but if it turns out it's a hundreds or thousands of policies that are over limit of the premium, that we could be losing a significant amount of premium tax. And the way I read it, it would only apply to, it would not interfere with an existing contract, only on new contracts after the sunset date. So it would have no impact on anything that was in place. But it will give us, or not give us, it will give the director a means to determine whether or not that we should make an adjustment for it, or if it's working as it's intended to. Because it's a new thing to the state of Alaska, we wanted to have a way that we could measure it at the end of a reasonable amount of time. Any further questions for the commissioner on amendment?
U2
number two. Seeing none, I'll lift my objection. Is there any further objection? Seeing none, that amendment was adopted as well, and that brings us back to the committee. Any further questions on the bill? What are the wishes of the committee?
Okay. I move House Bill 102, version U, as amended from committee with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Seeing no objection, the bill is moved out of committee and we're adjourned at 10 minutes to 4.